So we're here with Victoria Price, who is the author of a biography about her father, Vincent Price, A Daughter's Biography, which I understand was released back in 1999, but you did an update to it more recently in 2014. Now, Victoria is accomplished in her own right. She's an interior designer, an art consultant, public speaker, but she also frequently is called to talk about her father, the late actor Vincent Price. Welcome, Victoria. Thanks for coming on WTOP with us.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
So I can imagine that it's Halloween time, and do you get more calls like this more frequently at this time of year because of your dad, horror master of the golden age of horror and beyond?
Yes.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'll tell you why I decided to try to get an interview with you today. I'm a big fan of Turner Classic movies, so, and also a big fan of your father's. I was sitting around watching TCM the other day, and a retrospective between the movies came on about your dad, and I just had this warm and gushy feeling because I knew it's fall and Halloween's coming, and I knew a lot of his films were going to be broadcast on TCM, and I thought, you know, not many actors can produce that kind of feeling among his fans as your dad. And, you know, I started Googling around to see if perhaps I can find an angle to pitch to my editors, and realize that there are a ton of stories out there about your father for people, by people who, like me, just have this really deep appreciation for his work in terms of, like, you know, the old time films he did, the classic radio, and many people might know that, not know this, in, you know, the field of gourmet food with his treasured recipes.
Yes, absolutely.
So I was wondering if you could, you know, tell me a little bit about what the response that you get from his fans.
You know, when he was alive, people called him a Renaissance man, and I think that was a way of packaging the fact that he loved so many things, was curious about so many things, was interested in so many things. And so that was a way of finding something simple that would encompass all of that. And people who still love my dad get that. They get all of him. And I feel like that's really kind of what people understand about him and love about him, and what keeps him alive, is that he was so unique and so all-encompassing. So there are people who are horror fans, there are people who are cooking fans, there are people who are art lovers, there are people who just are drawn to interesting people. And I think that, you know, it's really that whole package that sort of defies packaging, that's what people love.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking that, you know, no matter what kind of character he was playing, and he played villains, he played cads, he played heels, he played detectives, he played historical figures on top of all of the sort of horror figures that he played later on in his career. But he seemed to bring this charisma to each of them so that he was ultimately believable at whatever character he was playing at any moment.
Exactly. He felt that the job of an actor was to make the unbelievable believable. He actually said that. And I think that no matter how far out what he was doing was, people bought into it because they wanted to buy into it. They wanted to believe him. And I think that that's really a unique thing, because really, let's be honest, some of the things he did were way out there, very outlandish. But,
well,
he did it.
I kind of wanted to talk about that now. You had mentioned in an earlier interview that I came across that you were born when he was 51 years old. But you were born in the early 60s, so I would say you were probably in your adolescence, right in the throes of your dad's, you know, horror genre, that end of his career. and in the throes of the counterculture at the time. How did it feel for you growing up in this atmosphere where your dad was doing a lot of these crazy films, whether it be the Roger Corman films or later on the Dr. Fibes films and, you know, Theater of Blood, you know, things that were just really edgy and creepy, but of course your father gave his unmistakable flair to?
You know, I didn't really watch many of them. I watched the things in which he spoofed himself, but I didn't watch the things where he scared people. I just couldn't do it, you know? I was an impressionable kid. It just frankly scared me too much. So when everybody said my dad was scary, I was like, are you kidding? It seemed unbelievable to me that anyone would be scared by this totally sweet man.
So it sounds like the home life was a lot different than, I guess, whatever the professional persona was at that time, in that period.
Exactly. He was a loving, kind, generous, funny, totally unscary man.
Right. And this was right around the time that he and your mom had written The Treasury of Recipes.
Exactly. They wrote cookbooks, art books. Those were his passions.
You know, just going off on the cookbook for a second, literally my husband and I stumbled upon it while we were in an inn in Leesburg, Virginia. We saw it on the shelf, we're pouring through it, and we were just, you know, agog. It was so awesome. And I ended up buying him a copy for Christmas years later. Then I go,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I went online, prior to our interview, and I found out that it's a cult classic. I mean, this thing is huge.
Yeah. Eighth most popular out-of-print book of any kind it became, which is why we released the 50th anniversary edition last year. And that did so well that now the second cookbook they wrote, which is Come Into the Kitchen, is coming out this month in October.
Okay, so you go to Barnes & Noble and the shelves are filled with celebrity cookbooks of all kinds. What is it about this cookbook that has made it so popular, so incredibly popular?
I think it's a time capsule. I also think it captures who my dad was, which was this omnivorous human being, and I don't just mean that in regards to food. He was omnivorous about life. He just wanted to eat life up. And so I really feel that is kind of what still makes it so alive, is that comes through, that aliveness comes through.
Yeah. When you say time capsule, that was one of the things that we found so fascinating about it were the pictures and the menus, because it wasn't just it's not just a series of recipes. They're experiences that he and your mother
had. Exactly. Which is so cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get back to the counterculture. Now, this sort of, I mean, talking about your dad as the Renaissance man who loved life and embraced it, it would seem that, you know, many of his peers who came sort of into their professional own, you know, back in the 30s and 40s, you know, by the 60s and 70s were feeling a little awkward about how the aesthetic was changing, movies were changing, culture was changing. But your dad really seemed to just flow with that. Is this because of that's who he was?
You know, he was somebody who stayed up with the times because that interested him. My mother was the same way. My stepmother was the same way. So he surrounded himself with people who were curious about life and being alive and stayed hooked into that. And I think that's really important to recognize in why he has remained so popular. It's that he was somebody who wanted to be current, was interested in what was current, and wanted to be current. And I think that's something that wasn't just about remaining popular, it was about being alive in the world in the moment. And I think that's a really interesting and important aspect to thinking about my dad.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is that he did it within a genre that could have been perceived as old-fashioned, But yet he surrounded himself and worked with directors and other actors who were really unafraid to take chances. So it didn't come off as old-fashioned or forced or like, oh, here's an older actor who's trying to like keep up with the times or whatever. He was actually sort of like bringing the times with him, you know, into this other, you know, era.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
I think that that was something that he did very well. He bridged eras. He was absolutely current, but then he was really old school. And of course, now we know that old school is cool.
Yeah, it's hip. It's absolutely hip. He's one of those rare actors where, I mean, when you say cross-generational, it's for real with him.
Right. Yes. No, you have young people, older people, every age, and he sort of defies demographics, and he really did that when he was a kid.
I'm sure you've seen the tribute that director John Waters did of your dad. I think it was last year that they first debuted this.
Yes.
Oh, it is. It has to be the best tribute. They do these tributes. This is a regular staple of Turner Classic Movies, where an actor or director of or a child of an actor will give a tribute, you know, complete with clips from the movies, you know, of the person. And John Waters just delivered this wonderful, loving, endearing piece on your dad, where he talked about how, as a child himself, in Baltimore, going to the movies, and I believe it was The Tingler that he had seen, and he said right there and then he left, you know, the film saying, this is what I'm going to do with my life. And I was wondering, I mean, do you get that from time to time? Do you hear people say that your dad inspired me or inspires me in any way?
Yeah, all the time. From famous people to people no one's ever heard of who come up to me and say, your dad helped me make it through my childhood. Your dad inspired me to be an artist. Your dad wrote to me. Your dad commissioned my first work of art. He was so inspirational to so many people. And what a gift is that?
Wow. And I had also, you know, read that back in the 50s, your dad was talking out against, you know, prejudice and bias at a time mm-hmm. when, okay, it wasn't exactly politically correct to do so. And this sort of tolerance and this worldview carried on throughout, you know, his life and career. I mean, that's what he stood for.
Yes, absolutely. He was somebody who really did not see difference. He saw us all as being connected and one. And he was a populist. He was anti-elitist. He was tolerant and accepting. He coexisted and promoted freedom of all kinds. And what a gift to grow up with somebody like that.
Well, you know, just as an aside there, what kind of relationship did you have with your dad? From what I've read, that, you know, you worked on this last book with him before he died at the age of 82 in 1993. You know, what kind of father-daughter relationship did you have that you could share with us?
We were really close. I was a daddy's girl, and I just loved him. And when my stepmother came along, that made it difficult because she was very jealous of that. So she tried to come between us, and she managed to do that in some way, but he never let it happen. It was hard on all of us, but she tried. And he stood up to her the best he could. He was somebody who didn't like conflict, but it was important to him to keep our relationship going. And I was just seeing an old letter that he'd written me. And in it, he said, this was when I was in my early 20s, how much he appreciated that our friendship kept growing. And I loved reading that. It was such an acknowledgement of what I always felt. But to see it from him was wonderful.
Absolutely. And, you know, not all daughters can say that. I know it must have been difficult for you, you know, seeing him. You mentioned in another interview his last movie, Edward Scissorhands, must have been sort of a bittersweet moment. And I don't know if you still watch the movie now or if it's difficult for you to do so.
It's so sweet. I love that it's there, but it definitely is emotional for me. So, because it's so much him at the end of his life.
Right. Now, admittedly, you do not like the horror films, but I mean, not many people know what a huge benefactor he was of the arts. And it seems to me that that's what the bond that you had together and what he imparted to you, because so much of your career involves the aesthetic and the arts and design.
Absolutely. No, he encouraged me to pursue all of the creative things in which I was interested, writing and the arts. And you know, so many kids struggle to have their parents support what they want to do. And he was just wonderful about that. And, you know, how fortunate am I?
I know. There is the Vincent Price Museum of Art in California. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
He and my mother started it together in the 1950s. So it's been around for a very long time. I'm a board member, and it's a wonderful place because it gives opportunities for artists who might not otherwise get shown in museums for reasons that aren't necessarily great. Just sort of a narrow-minded, still elitist mentality within museums to be shown. Yeah. And we've gotten a lot of recognition and we also provide access to the visual arts for the kids who go to East Los Angeles College, which is where the museum is. That's 35,000 students a semester. Some amazing artists have come out of that program. But on top of that, we also are there for the community. And, you know, there's a big divide between East and West LA. And so my parents were very purposeful in starting that museum in East LA, not in West LA.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's wonderful. And I don't think enough people know that. They know of him and in his film career, but they don't know what a lasting legacy there is in the arts. Well, I really appreciate you coming on to talk about these things.
I really, really appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much.
Victoria Price, daughter of Vincent Price. Thank you, and you've been on WTOP.